Welcome to another edition of Critical Thinking. I'm your host and producer for this series, Andrew Patner. Tonight, a very special program, a full hour with Riccardo Muti, music director of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, recorded on Sunday, June 16th, Sunday morning, in fact, in the basement music conductor's suite at Orchestra Hall. We normally might break up such a discussion into components or make a couple of shows out of it, but in this case, since Mr. Muti is talking both about his ongoing and future relationship with the orchestra and talking specifically about his programs this coming week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with the Chicago Symphony Chorus as well, music of Verdi, Mozart, and Vivaldi, we decided to bring you the entire conversation as it happened this evening. On the peninsula where you come from, Maestro, they used to speak a language, they still speak a closely related one, that included the phrase, tempus fugit. And it is remarkable to think that time does really fly. It's exactly 5 years ago that you and the Chicago Symphony announced that you would be joining Chicago as music director in succeeding a long line of important and interesting figures. And it's the end now as we speak. One more special concert and 1 week of subscription concerts, very important ones. It's the end of your third season as music director. So curious, as we get started, to perhaps both have you reflect a little bit and also on this five-year period, these three seasons, and also, frankly, it's the normal time in a five-year term when people start talking about the future. I know you are not focused on predictions of the future, but welcome, of course, Maestro Riccardo Muti, and your turn.
Oh, thank you for your welcome. And you mentioned a phrase that is part of our literature. You said tempus fugit. It is the way the Germans and the Austrians okay. Say, because they believe that the Holy Roman Empire belonged to them. That is, in a way, true after the glorious period of
when it was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire.
And
right?
We say tempus fugit.
Of course.
But we are still discussing, Italians and Germans, too, about what is the right pronunciation. Like Caesar, they say Caesar, si. And we say Caesar.
Si.
Anyway, Roma is in Italy, is not in Germany.
That, okay.
At least we have the authority of the land.
All right. No. We leave the Etruscans out.
No. Yeah, but they were before the Romans.
Right.
Yeah. And and all the Apuli, from there
yes.
comes Apulia.
Right.
No?
Right.
The Apuli, the Etruscan, the Sanniti.
Yes.
So there were a lot of tribes. And that they became colony. Like the city of Cologne in Germany.
Right.
The name comes from Colonia. That
right.
was a colony of the Roman Empire. Actually, speaking about it's nothing to do with music, but in front of the Teatro Argentina in Rome, that is a very old theater, beautiful theater, where many premieres of Rossini, Bellini, Cimarosa, etc., etc. Just in front of the theater, there are the ruins of the Roman Foro. Roman Forum. And the archaeologists have found, they think, a place where Caesar was killed by Brutus. Exactly the place. I don't know if they found the blood, but they are sure that that was the place. And I was shocked about the fact that when the news came in the newspapers, after we had some people, that anonymous people, that brought flowers to the place. So the Roman mentality
yes.
of Caesar is there.
It's Caesar still there. Yes.
It's still around. Anyway, when I came here 5 years ago, 2007, I think.
No, 2008.
I didn't know that a new chapter in my musical life.
Oh, you came here 2007. Yes, the announcement was 2008.
And I didn't know anything. I thought it was just an invitation and to meet this great orchestra that I had not conducted since 1973. And as you know, because you have been following as a friend and as a critic, that sometimes can be in contradiction.
certainly and, can.
fortunately.
Agreed.
I didn't know that a new chapter was going to start in this city. And depended very much on many reasons. First, I was in love with the orchestra from the first moment. I found an orchestra that was ready to do anything I was asking musically. Not because everything I was asking was right, but they believed in this approach of my approach to music. And in fact, we made a tour that was extremely successful in Europe. And after, when I came back, this relationship became even tighter. And so when the orchestra practically, of course, is the board of directors, is the management, et cetera, et cetera. But I like to underline the orchestra because if the musicians don't want the conductor, there is no board of directors or manager or agent or president that can force. And also I'm very proud about the fact that my career, I have to use this horrible word, was made by the orchestras. Because the Florence in London, in Philadelphia, in La Scala, and in Chicago, were the musicians that right. asked me to come and to take the position of music director. So in these 3 years, I think, and including all the other tours that we have made, and the recording of the Verdi Requiem that won 2 Grammys, my relationship with the musicians and my way of communicating with them outside of the music also right. Became very, very interesting and very enriching. I think on both sides. Mm-hmm. And we have touched a repertoire that is very, very
wide.
Thank you. Very wide, and from the Baroque repertoire to the contemporary repertoire, going through Haydn, Mozart, Vivaldi, and Wagner, Verdi, Mendelssohn, Beethoven, Brahms, Bruckner, Prokofiev, Shostakovich. So.
And Bach, as you said before that.
Sì, yeah. Bach before that. Of course, with approach that belong to a symphonic orchestra, because today when we play Bach or the so-called Baroque composers, there are two theories, to perform with the Baroque ensembles or to perform also with the traditional symphonic orchestras. But I believe in both ways, and of course the two instruments, the Baroque orchestra and the symphonic orchestra, requires two different approaches. Mm-hmm. As far as tempi, underlining the words, the phrases, etc., etc. It's like to play Bach, the well-tempered clavier, with the cembalo and with the piano. You cannot have mm-hmm. at the piano the same approach that you have at the cembalo,
right.
because
or
of the resonance yeah. of the instrument, the sensitivity of the instrument, etc., etc. So we have touched many aspects of the repertoire, and everything that we have done has had, as I said, not necessarily right, but certainly never the energy of playing was lost. So the players have found a way of answering to my musical request with great heart, with great affection.
Yes.
And that has convinced me that this orchestra is certainly the instrument that I would like with which to make music in the future mainly. Because I don't like to go around conducting so many orchestras. So when you have the Vienna Philharmonic and the request of Berlin Philharmonic after my last concert 2-3 years ago in Berlin, they hope to have me more and more there. But this is the orchestra that I find the natural instrument for me, mm-hmm. because I think that now we have a symbiosi.
Si, no? Si. The maestro was lacing his the fingers of his two hands together. It was a nice illustration.
And which I feel that when I come here, the sound comes back to what is my ideal of sound, that is a mixture, not scientifically studied, but right. naturally conceived, a mixture of the concept of sound that I have, that is the Vienna Philharmonic, that has been the orchestra mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. I've conducted mostly in my life, together with the strength, the power, the energy, physical energy mm-hmm. of the Chicago Symphony. Mm-hmm. So the two things together can make this orchestra, makes this orchestra very unique today.
If I may give an example from my listening and, quote, critical, unquote, perspective that's happening the week that we're speaking here in mid-June, that I think is almost a perfect illustration of what you're speaking about, and that is a performance of the Bruckner First Symphony, the C minor symphony. Because you have here an orchestra with a long history with Bruckner. I mean, not as long as orchestras that were Vienna, older than 1892, but right. But certainly it has played Bruckner and plays Bruckner, many would say, extremely well for a very wide array of interpretations, just to take Scholte, Boulez, Barenboim, and now Muti in the last few seasons. Haitink, of course, yes. And here is a conductor who has a great affection and a great understanding of Bruckner, but is not spending all of his time, such as a few conductors in history have done. The way your understanding of the piece and your affection for the piece, which is a controversial piece among some, and the way their both experience, but much more than that, ability to both be gentle, as you have done with them, and to give energy and the, quote, famous brass sound, unquote, was married absolutely. And I think both those who came with high expectations and those who came maybe suspicious and the large part of the audience who has never heard this piece live, most of the orchestra has never played this piece because it hadn't been played since 1995. To me, not that this is the summa of Muti and Chicago, the Bruckner First Symphony, but it's a summary and it's an illustration, without having discussed it with you before, of how there's a marriage. So not saying there isn't in the other works. You get my
si,
point?
Si, si, yeah. si. It's very clear.
Maybe very wrong.
No, I think that here, because... now, through internet or other things, the media, you know everything that is happening in the world, etc., etc. But in the past, when I came here as music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra, and so I had been already many times with the Vienna Philharmonic, with Salzburg Festival, Berlin Philharmonic, people didn't know, because there is always a sort of mental attitude that the Italians are good in the Italian music.
Right.
But this is absolutely wrong, because first, we have in Italy a long and important Wagner tradition, for mm-hmm. example, mm-hmm. and not before Toscanini, mm-hmm. And the time of Verdi, so Mariani, Angelo Mariani, sì. From Ravenna, by the way, the city where I live. He was the one that introduced Wagner in Italy mm-hmm. with Lohengrin in Bologna. and Verdi and Boito went there
right.
to hear. And in Bologna, there's still the score that Verdi had in his hands following the opera, with the comments mm-hmm. of Verdi that are not very, not very. Friendly.
Yeah, but that's Lohengrin.
But Lohengrin no, was many times here, Verdi. Lohengrin is too long. And Giuseppe Martucci, whose music I have done a little here,
right.
some of his music. He was the first to conduct Tristan und Isolde in Italy, and then the great tradition of Toscanini in La Scala, Furtwängler in La Scala, etc., etc. So Wagner, also we know that Wagner liked and admired very much the Italian way
of
approaching his music, because has a cantabilità that many times in the German performances, with some exceptions, of course, doesn't exist, because it's very heavy and not clear what happens in the contrapoint in the different lines. We have an approach that is much more, is not Mediterranean, it's più cantabile.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
sing every part. It was the way Toscanini did De Sabata.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Tristan of the Sabata
right.
in Bayreuth is still considered today the greatest performance of Tristan
mm-hmm.
in the history of Bayreuth.
Mm-hmm.
And the same happened with Bruckner. Of course, Bruckner not so much with the hands of Toscanini, that of course was also non a Mahler conductor, but for other reasons,
right.
Because there was the conflict between the two conductors,
right.
but the fault was of Toscanini, not
of
Mahler.
Not of Mahler, right.
And then some German conductors that still now don't touch a note of Mahler.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very strange to analyze what happens in the world of performers.
Yes.
For example, Savalisch never conducted a note of Mahler.
Mm-hmm.
Telemann doesn't conduct Mahler
right.
at all. And I spoke with him, and he said, but I'm Bruckner conductor. Also, that doesn't mean anything. What is a Bruckner
right,
conductor?
Right, right.
Also, even if in this country is used a lot, this is a Bruckner orchestra, this is a Mahler orchestra, this is... I mean, I think that an orchestra, even a mediocre orchestra, in the hands of a great conductor that understands the music of Bruckner and Mahler, can make the orchestra sound like a Mahler orchestra or
sure.
Bruckner orchestra.
But there are orchestras with better resources, aren't there?
Certo, yeah. The resources, sì. But then you have to have the conductor that has to use,
that
knows how to use. There are so many things interesting about this. Like Toscanini always said one famous phrase that has become famous. Non esistono cattive orchestre, esistono solo cattivi direttori.
Mm-hmm.
Bad orchestras don't exist. Only bad conductors mm-hmm. exist. But when he wanted to have an orchestra for him, then he made the NBC orchestra.
Right.
He didn't go to a lost place
right.
in the
right.
world.
Right.
And so there are many, many things. Certainly, there are some, come si dice in English, a stereotype.
Yes, same.
That means there's some tradition of the German music too heavy.
Right.
Too heavy, and that's German. But then when you take Knappersbusch
right.
and you hear that it's very heavy and not very clear in the middle, and you take Erich Kleiber,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the father of Carlos
yeah.
Kleiber, and everything is much lighter,
right.
and
right.
Karajan also.
Right.
So I think that the heaviness of certain German music has become more heavy during the Nazi period,
mm-hmm.
because to underline the power and
mm-hmm.
the depth mm-hmm. of this music, and so many of the so-called traditions became an exaggeration or sometimes a caricature, like the ritardando in the Beethoven Fifth Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
seems that the earthquake is coming. But in the Beethoven, when in the symphony wants a ritardando, he writes for the oboe. But then the cell, ta-ta-ta-ta, this note, this must remain exactly the same. Right. There is no reason to arrive to the climax making ritardando, exaggerating, right. Et cetera. You know, this is the Sturm und Drang of the Germany, et cetera, et cetera. So all this, the stylistically more reasonable approach that have been done in the 70s, yes. That were very questionable because at the first moment they created a lot of controversy. You know? But they have been extremely important to put some right accents on what is the right style. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows exactly what is the right style, but certainly to have Handel that sounds like Rachmaninoff is wrong.
It's an idea.
But we have heard
anything of that provokes the artists to go back to the score and try to erase temporarily in their mind recordings, other traditions, and to see what they find there is going to be a good thing. Then they can come back and you put these pieces back together and make your own interpretation. But by making this kind of aggressive scholarship, even people who at the time pushed away now would say, well, of course we know this, you know, because we're able to go back and look at what did Beethoven write.
Yeah, but we have to be careful when we say to go back. For example, in mm-hmm. one place in Europe, recently has been done Norma with old instruments.
Right.
All the instruments, and with a voice that has nothing to do with mm-hmm. Norma. I will not mention names, of course, but I think that these things can be done in places where you can get away with mm-hmm. with this kind mm-hmm. of, but if you do a kind of Norma like this in Italy, would be a revolution, you know. Perché Bellini is a composer that has gone through a tradition that goes directly to Bellini. And so when we had Callas, Cavalier, Scotto, Cerquetti, Sutherland, these big voices that was a soprano drammatico con agilità,
sì.
we call in Italy. That, and we know that Malibran was mm-hmm. the first Norma, and Grisi, that is a soprano, was Adalgisa. And still now they go on having the mezzo-soprano singing Adalgisa.
Right.
That is completely wrong,
right.
Because we know that Malibran and Grisi, they alternated
right.
the parts. One sang one night Norma,
right.
and the other Adalgisa, and the other way around. And we have a tradition of playing this music of a Sicilian composer that came from the Neapolitan school, full of energy, full mm-hmm. of... And it's the way still now the musical band in the south of Italy,
right.
when they
banda.
Have La Banda, yeah. they play this music. It's with great energy.
Right.
So when you go with this old way of approaching music and reduce, and you take all the blood...
Right.
And to take the blood out of the Sicilians.
And you have only a chiffon and a floating flute melody.
It's a Bellini, not a... So it's like the waves of the sea. They go in one direction and then they go back and then they mm-hmm. go back and until the sea becomes quiet.
Yeah.
And we can navigate.
Right. Now, this may all seem like a parenthesis, but to come back to where we were, back again, this word, with your comfort, your interest, your excitement with the orchestra, of course, we know you and the management does exist, and it's a fine one. You're not making any announcements at this time, but do you think it's a good guess that we might continue to see you in Chicago after the next two seasons?
I think so. Yeah. Of course, nothing has been finalized. Si dice così, finalized.
Sì, sì.
But I think that as far as the orchestra is concerned, there is no reason at all to stop this musical relationship.
And as far as Muti is concerned?
The same. I love this city. My children love this city. I think that is a fantastic place. When I'm here, I feel comfortable because it's a city where you can walk, you can live. But of course, it's clear that going on with my age, more and more I become homesick. You see, in my room there is the picture of Napoli and the picture of the castle of Friedrich Hohenstaufen in Puglia. But for example, one of my dreams now there is a new mayor in Roma. But this is something that I'm insisting since 2 years ago, is to make Chicago and Roma two sister cities, because I think it would be important for both cities. One is the technologically very advanced city and other things, etc., the architecture, and the other is the center of the culture of the old and with all the works of art that we have. So the mixture of...
But I think we can also say there is... fine technology and design and other things coming from Rome, and we have some culture here as well. Even some from your country. But you're right, it's a pair. It's a pair.
The fact that the two cities can go together, the old and the new. You know? But of course, in the old there is a lot of new, in the, and here in the new there is an old.
But they are both cities, at least in their... modern 19th, 20th century, they're both cities of self-making sense and people, isn't it? The energy is a local energy, not only a national energy or a regional energy.
See, what I hope, and I think that we are working here in this direction with management, is in the future, I am sure that in the future will be only 4 or 5 orchestras in the world that will be the real competitive orchestras. I don't mean the best orchestras, but you know, the orchestras that represent the cream of, not necessarily in quality, but in history and proposals. And certainly will be, in Europe you have the Vienna and the Berlin Philharmonic, for sure. And then maybe a London Orchestra, and so three, and two American orchestras, maybe one Russian orchestra,
Emerges,
And this will be the orchestras that will represent the culture, Europe, United States, and maybe because, of course, the Chinese and the Japanese are very much interested in our culture, and they will more and more and more and more get there. But there is no orchestra there that can represent an history, etc. So we have to work in that direction, trying to make this orchestra that is an international orchestra, but really international, we have to make it, no? And so it is an the culture will be the element more and more that can represent the culture of a nation. So, and if a nation wants to solve some problems and not only diplomatically but culturally, that is culture is very powerful in this sense, we have to look through the tours become extremely important. So the South America, because it's a country that is coming up, also economically, is and Chicago is at the center of the United States, and there's a large Hispanic population, and so that means you can go from Chicago with a line directly to Mexico, and then go to South America, and the other part is the East. The Far East, China, Korea, and Japan. That was so. Europe will be the I said Vienna Philharmonic and Berlin Philharmonic because it's the center of the Germanic culture. And but Europe will be more and more like a fantastic museum to visit if we don't wake, we Europeans don't wake up,
right,
and decided not to have just to stay under the sun and to see the tourists that come,
right,
and visit,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. But every orchestra and everybody from the world will feel the need to go to Roma, to Venice, to Florence, no, to Sicily, and then also France, England, etc., etc., and because that is the cradle, mm-hmm, of our culture. And then fortunately we have a great musical history, and not only musical history in Israel, that represents also a cradle in many other aspects, not
of
only
course
the music, but as when I was in Philadelphia, Norman Carroll, the principal, the concertmeister of the Philadelphia Orchestra, after my first concerts, because they liked the way I was making music, they came to my room and said, "Are you sure that you are not Jewish?" And I said, I don't know, but we all come from there.
Yes, right, originally. Right. So are you saying that you can see over time, as these partnerships develop and as these, the singularity of this cream orchestra, shall we say, is established, that you would be able to be conducting the orchestra more often in Italy or more often in Europe, and not only
this
in
is my hope.
Chicago.
This
right.
is no
right.
in Chicago. No,
no, of course.
Because
I say not only. I didn't mean you're going
to
take it
to be the because we many times we use phrases that have become only phrases without
right.
the only words.
Substance, right.
So, yeah. Without some like the today in the world everybody speaks about the culture,
right, right.
And the cut are only on culture. Right. More we say culture, more right. the governments cut the
right.
money.
Right.
So when I say that the a great orchestra like Chicago can be the ambassador of
right.
not only Chicago, but you know, a prominent expression of the American culture, that is in a way also a culture that has the roots in Europe.
Of course.
And so this legacy creates a sort of togetherness
yes.
With the rest of the world. And we have to do more in this direction. If not, the orchestra will remain a great orchestra, but local.
Right.
And like you have the Dresden Staatskapelle, for example, that is a very good orchestra, an excellent orchestra. Or other orchestras like Cologne, Leipzig, the Bayerische Rundfunk, mm-hmm. that is a wonderful orchestra, etc., yeah. etc. But they don't have the charisma.
Right.
of the Berlin Philharmonic.
Right,
no?
right.
So at certain point, because the money goes less, the orchestras that will be invited and will represent, for example, the Japanese, they want the Berlin Philharmonic. The Vienna Philharmonic is for them the pinnacle. Of
right.
the, and the theater, they want La Scala for Verdi.
Right.
They Bellini, Donizetti, Rossini, etc.,
right.
or Puccini. Then Vienna for Mozart and Strauss.
Right.
Bayreuth for Wagner.
Right.
So they have the mentality, of course, of selecting.
Right. Right.
And
number one.
See,
yeah.
This is, for example, if La Scala goes to Tokyo and offers Mozart, they will make a bad face, no? Or
right.
if the Vienna plays Verdi, they will be accepted, but in their mind, Verdi is La Scala, no?
Mm-hmm.
That is not right, but
right.
we have to understand that they need to have a direction.
Right.
And in fact, many times, I think, well, for example, Paris, if Paris goes with Debussy or Gounod, etc., the Paris opera, but then the Met, or Covent Garden, they are considered, especially the Met, a great theater. But a little bit, a la carte.
Yes, so, a la carte, eclectic, a la carte is better.
Say, well, okay, we take
right.
Verdi from them,
yeah.
we take Debussy, we take Schoenberg, but
right.
when we want the real wine,
yeah.
we have
yeah.
to go
yeah.
In California or Tuscany,
right, etc. Right, right. So we have to find a way not to compromise, but a way to better connect with each of these regions to represent what can be done here.
That is the future. Yeah. If not, we will go on with the system that, okay, we do a Beethoven symphony, we do a Brahms symphony, then we perform a contemporary piece to give a favor to the composer and to give the possibility to the critics to say, okay, they are doing something for the contemporary music. But that's it becomes something old at certain point, you know, like some modern régie, pretend to be si dice così pretend si. They claim to be modern, but they are doing the same things that they are doing since 40, 50 years ago.
Black sunglasses, briefcases, overcoats.
And they said it's new. No, it's not new. And what is worse, that you have all these briefcases, sunglasses, et cetera, et cetera, in Mozart or in Haydn, et cetera. And then in the pit, all the instruments that play in the other direction. Right. So the distance is
great. Speaking of the near future, you have a very interesting program to wrap up the season. You have the four sacred pieces of Verdi, the Magnificat of Vivaldi, and the Ave Verum Corpus of Mozart. Maybe you can say something about these.
See, I was shocked to read that the Magnificat will be the first performance.
Really? I hadn't looked at that yet. I'm not wholly surprised, but it is surprising and shocking.
The first performance.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the piece that I conducted last year in front of the Pope Benedict. He, after the performance, and two of the sacred pieces, the Stabat Mater and Te Deum, and after the performance, he gave a lesson on this music that left everybody astonished. Mm. The depth.
And without notes, I assume.
Was really...
Maybe he is pursuing musicology now in his emeritus because he has a gift for it.
Yeah. Ah, sì, 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 ma
la passion.
La profondità, veramente, the analysis.
Profundity,
sì. And so I'm glad that will be the... I have done the Magnificat many, 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 many times. Actually, is one of the... has become one of the historical recordings of EMI. Mm-hmm. They have a line of the historical recording, and Magnificat, and I recorded with Teresa Berganza.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have this young Russian soprano, mezzo soprano, that sang with me in Salzburg, in Munich, and in Salzburg and in Ravenna, La Betulia Liberata, di Mozart.
Sì.
She has a wonderful voice, and
I saw that production. I enjoyed it very much.
And you know, it's interesting because Vivaldi wrote two versions of the Magnificat. The choral part is the same in both versions, but then the second version, it's very interesting because there are several arias instead of choral pieces, and every aria is dedicated to a different girl. So you have the names of the girl.
I see.
Because the famous red priest,
right?
He was a teacher,
a supervisor and teacher, of course. Very professional.
And so he gave this little gift. I don't know if he asked for something.
Maybe he just liked their appearance.
Yeah, if he asked something in return. Yeah. But certainly there are the different names of the girls of the school. The introduction and these arias are really a masterpiece of the we play this music it's not important say baroque or no baroque. This is the Italian tradition. We play with a certain, like the Virtuosi di Roma. You remember the Virtuosi di Roma that Toscanini admired so much. The great energy in the way of making the music and the phrases. The four sacred pieces, I recorded this piece many years ago with the Berlin Philharmonic and the Swedish chorus.
Yes. That's a favorite choir of yours. Yeah.
See, and the Ave Verum I recorded with the Vienna Berlin Philharmonic also when I did the Mozart Requiem with them. Mm-hmm. And but then I have done many, many times, and the best performance that I remember was with the Wiener Sängerknaben.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because they sounded like angels, yes. And it's the way it should be done, right. With boys, right. And in the part of soprani, right. Mezzo-soprani. The Ave Verum is it's 4 minutes, 5 minutes. It's a music that I think that if there is a God, mm-hmm. somewhere, mm-hmm. only God could write mm-hmm. this, mm-hmm. because he is the right expression of the transcendent. Magnificat is a beautiful piece, typical of Vivaldi, but more on the earth. Mm-hmm. And the four sacred pieces are interesting because first is the last composition of Verdi.
Yes.
The Stabat Mater and Te Deum are with the orchestra, and the other two pieces only chorus. The Ave Maria, based on the enigmatic scale. Mm-hmm. Verdi invented this scale, mm-hmm. that is not the normal scale, right. Not the esatonale scale, is not the dodecaphonic scale, right. But is a scale that Verdi invented, right. With strange intervals, mm-hmm. and because it doesn't belong to any of these scales that I've mentioned, he called enigmatic, mm-hmm. is an enigma.
Right.
But on this scale, so strange, he wrote harmonically one of the most fantastic pieces. Very difficult for the chorus, because if you lose the intonation, you are really in trouble. There is no exit.
Right.
You start with Verdi, and you end with some of the most avant-garde composers of today. You know, it's very, very difficult. And then there is La Laude alla Vergine Maria, that Verdi originally wrote for four voices, mm-hmm. four solists.
Right.
And then, as a tradition, to do with a small chorus of ladies. It sounds much better, mm-hmm. of course, and Verdi approved. Mm-hmm. What is interesting is that, as you know, to put music under text that are very, 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 very high, it's impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, Laude alla Vergine Maria is on the text of Dante. Mm-hmm. Vergine Madre, figlia del tuo figlio, umile ed alta più che creatura, eccetera, eccetera. It's theologically one of the most complicated pieces, mm-hmm. Theologically speaking.
Sure.
Because underlines the contradiction of Mary.
Right.
Vergine, madre.
Right.
If you are virgin, you cannot be mother.
Right. Right.
So, but she is virgin.
Right.
But she is also mother.
Right.
Figlia del tuo figlio. Mm-hmm. You are daughter of your son.
Right. Right.
It's another contradiction.
Yes.
And umile ed alta. Mm-hmm. You are humble, mm-hmm. but high, mm-hmm. more than any other mm-hmm. creature.
Humble and to be worshipped. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More than any other creature on the earth. Mm-hmm. And so how you put music under this, it's mm-hmm. impossible. Mm-hmm. Like when you want to put music under the text of Leopardi, mm-hmm. it's so high that music can only ruin mm-hmm. the purity of mm-hmm. the text. But Verdi succeeded, yeah. I think,
yeah.
because it's one of the most pure and untouchable pieces.
Right.
As Kleiber said, there is some music.
And now we're speaking Carlos Kleiber. Carlos Kleiber
said to me, there is some music that is so profound that you can enjoy only looking at the music mm-hmm. on the page. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you try to bring the music to life, mm-hmm. you lose a lot of the intensity that you right. have in your mind, and you cannot produce in a concrete way with the instruments.
Right. There is this, I think, overused and perhaps inaccurate concept of late style, where you can fit almost anything together into a theory. But I think we do have an example, not of late style, but of an artist of the highest level who spent his entire life working, and then at the end is, of course, capable of creating things because of depth, experience, distillation, and we know this from Falstaff, we know this from the sacred pieces.
And Verdi was so critical in the last period of his life that he didn't want the four sacred pieces to be performed.
Yeah, so self-critical,
self-critical. Yeah. And self-critical, yes. And but then had started to be performed in Paris, etc., and then became... but it's rarely performed because for the chorus it's extremely... and this program... will be really a big challenge for the chorus, because from Mozart to Vivaldi to the four sacred pieces, the entire evening is based on the chorus.
Right.
And we will see, also because there are three aspects or three different ways of approaching the text. And Verdi, the four pieces are completely different one from the other. And we see.
Right.
I am confident that if the result will be good, that will be a great achievement from the chorus.
So we wish in bocca al lupo to
grazie,
the chorus.
Crepi,
and to you.
Lupo. Grazie.
Just to close, you mentioned Pope Benedict and his commentary analysis after you performed the Vivaldi. Yes, when you at this stage in your career encounter, be it a conversation, a lecture, an article, that raises some points that somehow had not yet been raised or had not yet hit you, as they say. And you have a piece that you have been working with, and not repeating, but working with for decades. Do you find yourself sitting back sometimes and saying, I want to revisit how I think about X or Y in this opera or this piece?
But always, Andrew, always I revisit. Not only when I have to conduct again a piece that I've conducted several times, but every day. For example, when I conduct Bruckner now, this or Scriabin, every afternoon before the concert I go through the score, and thinking and rethinking about what I have done, what I can make better, what I did wrong. So it's always because the end in our profession, fortunately, doesn't exist.
Right.
You are always searching, and hoping that you try to, come si dice, scavare in the sand.
Excavate.
Sand, hoping to find the water. No?
Right.
And sometimes you find the water.
Right.
Sometimes
divination.
sometimes only humidity.
Yeah.
And sometimes you stay with the sand.
I'm just curious, though, if there is an example that comes to mind, and if there isn't, it's fine, of course, where some unexpected event caused you, some reading or some experience or some caused you to go to a...
To
revisit a piece in an unexpected way.
See, especially when I read, I generally read the reviews, for example, and because I want to know what has been the impression to the public and to the critic. And sometimes, as Vyacheslav Richter used to, he was reading and said, oh, no, I don't agree with him. Oh, he's right. Oh, no, he's right. And so, because many times, when we read, we are the critics of the critic.
Of course.
It's the other way around. And there are certain, sometimes when I agree that the criticism is right, and sometimes when I don't agree. And so when I don't agree, I think for a moment why it was written. And then if I'm convinced about what I do, then I continue to do in the way. Other times I correct sometimes. But depends on the intelligence of what you read. You know?
Well, then there are only going to be a few times where it's going to affect.
No, è interessante. For example, we were talking before about the Bach B minor Mass.
Yes.
And I have done this piece with all kind of big orchestras and specialized chorus like the Schoenberg Choir
right.
in Vienna that is specialist of
right.
this. And of course, I come from a tradition that takes a lot of care of the text. And so the beginning, somebody can find that is too slow, the pace is not right, etc., etc. But when I think that Kyrie eleison means Lord have mercy, and you cannot take a tempo that because you are saying something that is extremely profound, and the tempo comes from the knowledge of the text. In fact, when I did with the Schoenberg Choir in Vienna, and that we made a tour with the Vienna Philharmonic and the Schoenberg Choir, I remember that at the first rehearsal, the chorus started Kyrie in the typical Baroque way, I almost collapsed on the chair because I said, but that, and so I started to work, and I said to Ortner, that is mm-hmm. the famous chorus master, mm-hmm. I said, "Don't worry, I'm going to destroy your chorus." And then every night the chorus was more and more comfortable with this tempo of the fuga. And the last concert I remember was in San Carlo in Napoli. And after the performance, the chorus master came and said, "Maestro, did we put enough blood in the performance?" So, but you know, the point is that nobody has the truth.
Right.
But sometimes we performers are out of the truth. And so a good advice helps us.
So when you performed the Bach here, do you think that there was something that some of the critics said that had some effect on what you might try another time? Or
no.
You're just, no.
No.
But
no.
You read them.
See,
but they didn't.
See. But, you know, when
no,
it's...
No, just because you raised it, that's the only reason I'm asking.
When the critic is honest, why? Nobody has to agree.
Right.
Of course, that is the way I learned the piece. I have done many, many times with the orchestras. And also, you have to consider, if you do, as I said before, with the instruments, all the instruments without vibrato, with this and that, and with a very small chorus, and then everything becomes more, how is it, agile?
Yes.
More light.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
When you have a larger orchestra, and right. I, for example, about the number, I disagree generally with the critics when they say it's too large, the orchestra mm-hmm. for Mozart, or too large. We know from a letter of Mozart that he wrote to his father, he was so excited about the fact that he had in a performance of his work in Mannheim, he had 10 contrabassi and 8 fagotti.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the number, it's
right.
the style
of course.
That makes it. You can have 3 contrabassi that play like a truck.
Right.
And you can have 12 contrabassi that play like angels.
Absolutely.
So, in fact, we know that when Haydn wrote The Creation, and we have all the documents in Vienna, the third performance was conducted by Salieri.
Mm-hmm.
And the performers between chorus and orchestra were 1,000 performers.
Wow.
1,000.
Wow.
And they showed me in Vienna in the library that the documents are how much they paid this, how much they paid that person, etc., etc. So today, of course, when we do next year the 5th symphony of Schubert, I will use 12 first violins, not 16. But sometimes music reveals some aspects when you use a different combination. For example, in Ravenna, last year during the festival, that was a festival for friendship, different religions, different right. people, etc., etc. So we had the people coming from Russia, the Orthodox, the Byzantine, the from Israel, from Italy, etc. So all together with different, or from Kenya.
Yes.
And so it was very interesting. And at the end, I wanted to finish with the Ave Verum of Mozart, having all these groups, so 20 from Israel, 20 from, they were from Tibet,
yes.
with this long instrument.
Yes, right. Oh. Yes, right.
So I said, all together, now we sing the Ave Verum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you, the Ave Verum, that always must be like a little gem,
right.
sung by a by 200 people of different nations and different tradition, with a large orchestra, but played with delicacy, was, I think, the greatest performance of Ave Verum,
yeah.
because it was the universe that was singing yeah. Ave Verum. And there were two or three Russian bass in this, the Orthodox. And when it's in the end, the last note, I just with a finger gave a sign that was not rehearsed. They gave a sign to the bassi of the
yes.
Russian chorus, and they went an octave lower.
Oh,
that sounded. I don't know what Mozart would have thought
no,
about
I
this.
Think you hear from this Riccardo Muti with a career of 5 decades. Music is an adventure and a discovery and more in some ways with new things. And you hear this in his voice. And if you were with me and Eric Arunas in this conversation, you could see it in the animation of his face and hands. So we first wish you to have a great set of concerts still here, and then a wonderful summer. We hope to catch up with you in Italy over the course of the summer, if possible, and then we see you back in the fall. And we hope, from what you said earlier, that we'll continue to see you back in the fall for some years to come.
Grazie, Andrew. Thank you. Grazie.
Riccardo Muti recorded Sunday morning, June 16, 2013, in the music director's suite in the basement of Orchestra Hall in downtown Chicago. Those concerts of Verdi, Mozart, and Vivaldi are this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at Orchestra Hall, cso.org, or 312-294-3000 for tickets and information. We'd like to thank Maestro Muti. We'd like to thank Emily Master, Celeste Roblevsky, Rochelle Rowe, and all of our friends at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra Association. I'd like to thank Eric Arunas for recording the interview superbly as always, and Matt DeStefano for putting the program together and making it sound great as always. Our funders, Alphawood Foundation, Dick and Susie Kiphart, and we'd like to note that Dick and Susie Kiphart tonight, Monday, June 17, jointly received the Carol Fox Award from Lyric Opera of Chicago, the highest honor the company can bestow, and one given infrequently, and I'm not sure ever given to two people at the same time before. Kudos and congratulations, Dick and Susie, who do so much for so much of Chicago, the arts, and other aspects of our lives. Let us know what you thought about this or any of our other programs. Drop us a line, RENTAP, that's Patner spelled backwards, RENTAP at AOL.com. Go to the WFMT Facebook page or visit the Chime In feature at WFMT.com. WFMT.com/critical thinking is the home of this program and all the programs in our always free Critical Thinking podcast. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week.